AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show for your Tuesday. Matt Hunter. This is once again, it's a reminder of what sometimes the frustration of Democrat of the Day last time was, you know, meetings unfortunately happen, stuff like that. Things pop up on calendars and people generally at 3 o'clock in the afternoon are for the most part working. And so you have a Democrat of the Day who might be, you know, working a regular job and all of a sudden they have to call you up on a relatively short notice and say, hey, by the way, I can't do it today. Okay. And then I frantically, please, someone be the Democrat of the Day. Yeah. Unfortunately, we are Democrat of the Day free today. Actually, I got a lot to talk about, that's for sure. And we do actually have an interview. How much do you know about Doc Ames?
Not much. One of the worst politicians in Minnesota.
Well, you were paying attention when I walked into the studio, yes. He was the mayor of Minneapolis. We don't see politicians this corrupt. Rarely. I mean, this is probably the most corrupt politician that ever in the history of the state, which is saying something because we've had some doozies. But Doc Ames, I think, it's not even a close debate. Dirty Doc Ames and the scandal that shook Minneapolis. Eric Rivenes is going to be the author joining us in a little bit to talk about an exceptional book. Really cool. And a great little moment of history. He made his brother the chief of police. I mean, that's just that should set it up for you. That should set it up for you on that level. I wanted to talk briefly about the Supreme Court ruling from yesterday, U.S. Supreme Court ruling, in regard to the sports betting. Now, what basically said is you can't limit sports betting just to Las Vegas. And it was a lawsuit brought by the state of New Jersey who wanted to have sports books. And if you don't know what a sports book is if you go to Vegas, and I used to, when I was working for a great company called Blakeway, I love that company. I still love that company. And I used to travel the West Coast for them, basically Western United States. That was my territory. And I'd have to go to Vegas. Ugh. Manufactured entertainment for people with regret. That's how I labeled it. I mean, there's not enough showers in the world after I got back from Vegas. But I'd go on out there, and if I had time to kill, I would actually go sit in the sports book. Not because I'd gamble, but because they had every game on. I mean, they had every game on. They had the horse racing over here, and every NHL game was on a TV, and every NBA game was on a TV, and every baseball game was on a TV. And I'd just sit and watch, and sometimes there was a... Oh, where was it? Was it the Luxor? They had a really good corned beef sandwich at the Luxor. A really good corned beef. And when you find something like that, it's like, okay, I know it. Going to get the corned beef. And then I'd sit there and I'd have a corned beef and a beverage, and I'd watch a game for a few hours and kill some time if I had some time to kill. And I'm not a gambler. I'm not one of these people that gets out there. But that's what a sports book is. It's basically sports wagering. You want to wager on the Super Bowl. You want to wager on the Twins versus Cardinals tonight. You want to wager on that game? You can. And you don't need to call your bookie where you might get a finger broken if you do not pay up on time if you were foolish enough to, you know, take the team that was the underdog by 20, you know? But it's interesting to hear the sports people in this town and how they reacted to that news. The days of a sports media where they had my God, sports media used to never get pushed around by the teams. The teams basically, they were there to report on the teams. They were not there to be friends of the teams. And the teams started slowly with bobbleheads and trinkets and stuff like that, bribing off sports guys. And to now you rarely get a sports guy that actually lays into a sports team with 1/10 the intensity of sports people from the 60s and 70s used to. Oh my God. There was guys that were banned from stadiums because they were so brutal on the management and the ownership and the team themselves that the team would not allow them to broadcast. So they would be sitting on the street outside the stadium doing their report on the public sidewalk. That's what kind of journalism used to exist in sports. And today it's you're not going to prevent me from going to a Vikings game. I'll talk about how great the stadium is. Don't badmouth me, okay? So it was interesting yesterday when, in unison, the entire sports community, all the guys that do on air, do writing, pretty much all in unison went, I'm not taking a position on this, but isn't this going to be the greatest thing that ever happened? Oh my God, it's going to be so wonderful. And you know, clearly this is something, I mean, the feeling is this is going to increase the value of leagues. It will increase the value of teams. This argument that, hey, sports is going to be more fun. Are you saying a 9-year-old is going to enjoy baseball more, that they can put a 5 spot on whether Buxton's going to get an in-the-park home run? And is that what you're saying? Because that seems kind of stupid to say that. But there clearly is this, you know, gambling. And we've talked about this before, whether it's slot machines, whether it's pull tabs, whether it's this, we have opened up Pandora's box when we let lotteries into the state. And basically it's eventually what you're going to have is when your community pool needs to be, get a new filter on it, they'll slap 6 or 7 slot machines eventually in the lobby of the community pool center and say, play a few rounds of slots for the pool. And, I mean, that's where we're eventually going to get. I mean, when I was in Germany, there were slot machines and gambling machines everywhere you went. That seems like we're eventually going to go. Gas stations, restaurants, everyone's going to have a gambling machine. But we should acknowledge the fact, and this was the tone, and this is why I'm bringing this up, because the tone that was brought up by sports people in this town yesterday when they were talking about the addiction element of gambling, which it is wildly addictive. I actually have a friend. I have no idea where they're at. I'm going to guess 7 years ago I lost touch with him. But I realized he had a gambling addiction when we were out at the casino. And, you know, he was one of those guys that always liked to go to the casino. So we went to the casino. And we were up like 150, and we're like, great, good deal, man. Let's go get some burgers. We're done. We're good. We covered the tab for the evening. And the guy's like, no. We're going to do great. Then he was like 8,000 up, and I'm like, wow, all right, great. We were doing really well. Let's walk away. Cause I don't gamble. So I'm like, you got 8,000. We walk away. You're gold. You got a boat, man. Might be not the nicest boat, but you got a boat with 8,000 bucks and a motor. Solid. Walk away. And the guy's like, no. You know what's better than $8,000? What? $100,000. Okay. So he started putting more bets on, and then his luck changed. And it went from 50 to hundreds to $500 bets. And then when he put $1,000 in the bet, we went from $8,000 up. No, he did. I did. This was the money we had as a group, as a pool. But he had $8,000. By the time we were over, he was $4,000 in the hole. And we're just sort of sitting there looking at him like, do you have this kind of money lying around? Because, you know, that's a lot of money. That's $4,000 that you just lost, and you're kind of shrugging your shoulders like, no big deal, like you stubbed your toe. Well, I mean, that was my first clue that this guy had a serious gambling addiction. And it ended up costing him his house, his wife, his car, his kids. I mean, his wife and his kids left, and I think they went out to California. You know, he was living in basically, he went from living in a very nice suburban house to living in basically kind of a real pit of an apartment complex. And then eventually he left. I think he went to Reno, moved out there, which, yeah, okay, that's a great place for you to go. But gambling is a very vicious addiction. And the way that we in this country, and of course I know there's already people out there going, listen to Namby Pamby McNeil trying to do the nanny state. If you've got a fairly well-recognized addiction in gambling addiction, should we just be taking it so willy-nilly? I mean, we don't just give booze to kids, do we? We don't give heaters to kindergartners. We don't even, you know, that you could label that the nanny state, couldn't you? Why don't you let kindergartners have a pack of Camels, huh, Matt? No filters. Start them young. Why don't you allow junior high school kids to have a few drinks? What's the big deal? nanny state. The reason why we regulate these things is because they are addictive and they are a beast upon themselves to have to deal with. And the reality is that there's a responsibility that we have to not basically tell the people who might be submissive to addictive behavior, hey, by the way, we're going to tempt you. We're going to put a buffet right in front of you. Buffet, here you go. Gambling, sports book, all that stuff. You don't do that in a rational society. Now, I already said at the beginning of this conversation, the cat's out of the bag. I mean, you know, you can basically, I believe you can like get online in Vegas and make a bet on a Vegas website that if it's associated with the casinos, I think you can do that, or you can at least go through an agent that can make a bet for you. I know at the Kentucky Derby, I was at a friend's house for a Kentucky Derby party and they were taking bets from the track. They actually had a connection to the betting machines at the track and you could take bets in Minnesota on the Kentucky Derby. The cat's out of the bag already on this. This is the new America, and there isn't a vice, there isn't a sin that we won't basically put out there under the guise of, you know, we don't want to be the nanny state, and frankly, let's look at it, they're looking at the tax base. If they can fund schools with sportsbook gambling at the Minnesota casinos, then they can take the money that we've designated for schools and give that back to millionaires. If they can fund Health and Human Services in the state of Minnesota via sportsbook, then basically they can take the money they dedicate for Health and Human Services and give that to wealthy people. I mean, that's what really this is about. But the problem is then you create a system where the vice is a necessity within your state budget, which then starts putting out some real freaking conflict of interest questions. So, I've said this before, you cannot tell me that this is something that you can just, if you are really just sort of saying, yep, just put the sports books in all the casinos in Minnesota, be done with it, then without thinking about the increased ramifications for gambling addiction in the state of Minnesota, we just saw a story. We have actually some of the worst mental health issues in the country in the state of Minnesota. We have a Republican House and Senate that refuse to do really anything to help the people with mental health issues in the state of Minnesota. And now you're going to create an entire new genre of people that are having addiction issues and mental health issues because of gambling willy-nilly. I think we have to put a little more thought into it. I'm not saying it's not eventually going to come, because let's face it, that's just the way things run in this world now, is that, you know, you only want to know the truth is it's only a matter of time in my mind before prostitution is. I know they'll all say, no, 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 you can't do that. But there was a time when I was a kid when the idea of gambling anywhere but Vegas or Atlantic City was taboo. Now most of the people who represent the political right in this country who back then were screaming never are the ones who are running as fast as they can to try to get meetings with the casino people in the state to try to get the sports book in there as fast as possible. What do you do? 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205 is the phone number. Take a break. Come on back. There are apparently some yelling going on in the House and the Senate. I'll talk about that when I do come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show on AM 950.
Hi, I'm Damian Strange, Executive Director of Northeast Minneapolis Arts Association, NEMA, and I'm personally inviting you to Arterworld May 18th through the 20th. View artwork of over 650 artists in every medium at more than 50 locations throughout Northeast Minneapolis, including studio buildings, art galleries, homes, storefronts, and local businesses. The Artist Open Studio Tour may include demonstrations, mini workshops, installations, and special exhibitions. Studio tours offer a great opportunity to ask questions, discuss techniques, experience art firsthand, and purchase unique artwork directly from artists. Arterworld gives you a unique opportunity to meet the artists who make our community so vibrant and invest in our art community by purchasing artwork that you connect with. For more information, go to NEMAA.org. That's NEMA.org. Looking forward to seeing you at Arterworld.
Hi, Matt McNeil for Rudy Luther Toyota. My first Toyota love was the RAV4 back in 1998. When I was traveling in February, I needed a rental car, and I jumped at the opportunity to drive one again. The RAV4 is fantastic with all the bells and whistles you need, and it has all the modern safety features to keep us safe, comfort as we vacationed. It fit all five of us and our luggage with ease. I was able to revisit my first love. Now, you can fall in love for yourself by test driving a RAV4 today at Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169.
Hi, Minnesota. Norman Goldman here. Join me every weekday from 5 to 8 p.m. for some clarity, wit, and wisdom on the latest issues of the day here on AM 950. Today on the show, as we begin year two of Robert Mueller's tenure as special counsel, is the firing coming anytime soon? Things have been quiet on this front, but with all the pressure coming, join me for 3 live hours of the Norman Goldman Show every weeknight here from 5 to 8 on AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota.
Warning, stand-up records may cause intestinal distress, fits of insane laughter, instant diarrhea, existential malaise, headaches, nausea, dizziness, vomiting, seasonal affective disorder, more headaches, pneumomono ultramicroscopic silicovolcanoconiosis. Stand-up records should not be handled by women who are pregnant, may become pregnant, have ever been pregnant, or personally know anyone who has been pregnant. Do not consult your doctor if he's operating heavy machinery. Stand-up records is for external application only. And stand-up records is, of course, good for a few laughs. So remember that standuprecords.com for the world's finest comedy CDs, DVDs, and merchandise. That's standuprecords.com. The revolution will be hilarious.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. VV in Maryland, thanks for watching on the Facebook stream. You go watch the show live on Facebook at am950radio.com. So I'm not quite sure what is going on. It was Erin May Quaid, the representative, who brought up the first point that she's getting yelled at on the House floor for trying to agree with the Republicans. And she sent me this message. It was an amendment to require Department of Health Services to train county and private child care licensing agencies to identify and prevent fraud. A few DFLers got up to speak in support of the amendment, and then Republicans started yelling about them agreeing with them. Now, I've tried to figure out what it is. It sounds like it's Drazkowski. Basically, Tina Liebling, Democrat, was pointing out everyone opposes fraud, points out that action has been taken. DFL wants to work with Franson in making sure child care fraud doesn't happen. Draz is getting very, very about the pause, but apparently, Kelly Ewell, you can't pause child care subsidies. So basically, what Drazkowski is trying to say is that he wants to basically pause the child care subsidies to stop fraud. But the reality is with the subsidy, when you have a budgetary item like that, you can't just go willy-nilly and stop the money on that. That's something you have to defund it on a legislative level. You can't just, at a flip of a switch, shut down the money flow. You can't do that. And it sounds like that's what got Drazkowski yelling and upset and angry. Franson is, Liebling asked Franson about Draz's notion that child care subsidies should be paused. Franson, child care assistance, not a charity program to be defrauded. Draz can have his own opinion, she says. So basically, she's even looking at what Draskowski's yelling about and started saying, you're yelling about nothing. And now, the funny thing is, Sally Jo Sorensen over at Blue Stem Prairie, every time they bring up a new issue, she's saying, oh, no one from the Republican Party is yelling right now. This, by the way, is a little look-see into the id of the Republicans right now. Let's just be honest. Many Republicans in the state, especially in rural districts, haven't really had to worry about campaigns outside of primaries. They really haven't. And I can tell you right now, I've heard from two people who are close to the Republican Party that the Cornish race, even though that the race to replace him wasn't as close, the fact that that closed up even in a district like that, that the feeling was, well, in maybe Sarah Anderson's Plymouth district or Jennifer Loon's Eden Prairie district, there's going to be a pretty close tightening there. But to see that 15 to 20 point closure in traditionally bright red districts was a real eye opener. And there's a lot of Republicans who 16, 17 points was a nice, comfortable win for them last time. And they're scared to death that that is gone. And not only is that gone, but they're going to actually have to run a campaign with kind of that centrist message. One of the, again, I'll go with Jeff Stein, what Stein says about this. Your primaries, you appeal to your base. The regular general election, you kind of sprint towards the center. And so what you've got is Republicans are kind of don't quite know what to do. And there isn't enough money to be spread around. Don't get me wrong. There's going to be plenty of dark money coming into the state to try to help Republicans. Absolutely. Pouring into the state. But overall, these guys are a little concerned and they're a little scared. That's why today, what was it? I saw a bunch of Republican clowns talking about this Fox 9 story about suitcases of cash leaving Minneapolis-St. Paul. And it's all coming from government programs and they're taking it out of country. Oh, it happens to be black people, I'm presuming, taking it out because they're all up in arms. Do they take a class on that? How to basically remove, they learn how to basically remove African-American from their outrage meters. Is that how they do it? I don't know. But needless to say, they're all up in arms about this alleged, all this cash that apparently, I guess, minority people are walking into the Capitol in St. Paul, filling up a briefcase with the cash, walking over, taking a flight out of MSP, and flying that money back home. I have no idea. I didn't really pay too much attention to the story, but apparently this is now a priority that we have to stop immediately. We have to stop the black people from leaving with suitcases full of cash. That's what it sounds like to me. I don't know. I mean, it's like I said, these are the issues. And what you are seeing on all this stuff, the Republicans are taking two distinct paths. One is the dog whistle talk to the Republican base. I'm against black people, only they don't say it like that. They're very careful with their wording. They almost, like I say, go to a class or a lecture or watch a video series or something like that. Is it on Netflix? I don't know. It's something. But they basically put all their dog whistle stuff. It's like, we know what those people in the metro area are up to. Those people in North Minneapolis with their Escalades and their protesting in the street and their briefcases of cash. They're purposely doing this because they're trying to appeal to the worst of society to be the base. That's what it is. That's the one angle. The other angle is what we've seen with Jennifer Lune and Sarah Anderson and Dario Anselmo and these guys in their metro area specifically, who are saying, hey, I'm really a moderate, even though I've never done anything in the capacity of at all of being a moderate in any capacity. I'm really a moderate. Don't vote me out. I mean, they're pleading this. They're scared, and they should be. I mean, my God, today alone we found out, actually last night we found out, Trump is talking to Sean Hannity. Think about that for a second. Think about that. Imagine if the Republicans had found out Keith Olbermann was talking to Barack Obama every night. Their beet red, vain topographical faces screaming about, Grah! They would be beside themselves. They would be screaming for immediate removal from office. They'd be screaming for him to get dragged from the White House. Hannity, by all means, is basically the chief of staff, the vice president, and his closest presidential advisor all wrapped up into one at this point. And at no point does anyone think the president of the United States talking to a talk show host on a nightly basis about, I guess, his bedtime cheeseburgers is inappropriate. Then there's this whole thing with the Chinese telephone company. Whew. Holy cow. And you know what? They can't wash the stink off. They're not going to be able to wash this stink off. So they have to look at their legs being tied to the Trump anchor. They have to be looking at a race which is going to be far more competitive than they're used to. They're looking at a lack of money that they're not going to have nearly the funds that they thought they were going to have. And they're not going to be able to spend willy-nilly. And they think that they're going to be, they're concerned because, you know what? The Democrats are, they're getting their message better. And so they're frantically, wildly, like a drunken man punching, trying to connect once. Find me something, something that I can campaign with, whether it makes me look like a moderate or whether that basically gets my far right pseudo-racist base up in arms. Get me something that I can put out there for the red meat for these guys. Because that's what it seems to be. And Drazkowski blowing up and yelling on the House floor. But and like I said, I'm not sure it was Drazkowski. It seems like it is. Just looking at various Twitter accounts and Twitter feeds, it seems like it was Drazkowski. And it doesn't seem like he was yelling at the Democrats for agreeing with him, by all means, it sounds like. That's the sign that the stress might be starting to get to these guys. Because let's just face it. Can you imagine any of these Republicans in the minority? Oh, my God. Can you imagine what these snowflakes would be like? You have to let us write these bills. You have to let us have a say. If I was the Republicans, or if I was the Democrats, and I had Republicans after the way they've treated the Democrats in the House, if they take back the House and the Republicans are demanding that, I would point to them with my middle finger and say, you're number one with me, jackass. I really would. Sit down and shut up. We already know what your detente and your compromise was in the past. We don't need that now. But that's me, and there's a reason I've been basically told I can't run for office ever. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. When we come on back, we'll talk to Eric Rivenes. It's Dirty Doc Ames and the Scandal That Shook Minneapolis. Great book that's out. Highly recommend this one. That's coming up when we come back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950.
Crooner's Lounge and Supper Club is delighted to offer its spacious facilities for your private function. From weddings, retirement parties, business dinners, or any special occasion, Crooner's combines a dedicated full-service special events team, an award-winning chef, and a beautiful lakeside ambiance to make your event a resounding success. Visit croonersloungemn.com to learn more about their private dining options or call 763-571-9020 to get a quote for your next event today.
It's home improvement season, and you know there's lots of projects to tackle. Here's one that won't break the budget. Get your air ducts cleaned by Zero Res. They need to be cleaned every 3 to 5 years to improve your furnace and your air quality. This month, save $50 when you get your air ducts Zero Resified. Plus, this month, get 3 rooms of carpet Zero Res clean, starting at $139. Call 952-ZERO-RES or visit ZeroResMN.com. Zero Res. Spell it backward or forward. Spells the same.
Hi, I'm Damian Strange, Executive Director of Northeast Minneapolis Arts Association, NEMA, and I'm personally inviting you to Arter World May 18th through the 20th. View artwork of over 650 artists in every medium at more than 50 locations throughout Northeast Minneapolis, including studio buildings, art galleries, homes, storefronts, and local businesses. The Artist Open Studio Tour may include demonstrations, mini workshops, installations, and special exhibitions. Studio tours offer a great opportunity to ask questions, discuss techniques, experience art firsthand, and purchase unique artwork directly from artists. Arter World gives you a unique opportunity to meet the artists who make our community so vibrant and invest in our art community by purchasing artwork that you connect with. For more information, go to NEMAA.org. That's NEMA.org. Looking forward to seeing you at Arter World.
With your AM 950 weather, I'm Hunter Hawes. Today, sunny with a high near 78. Tonight, clear with a low around 53. Wednesday, sunny with a high near 85. This week's EatLocalMinnesota.com restaurant of the week is the Downtowner Wood Fire Grill. The Downtowner is the perfect choice for breakfast, lunch, and dinner 7 days a week. The menu is considered American bistro with a Persian touch. Located on 253 West 7th Street in St. Paul. Find out more at DowntownerWoodFire.com.
Indeed. Fantastic. The fire roasted leg of lamb is very good. Try the clams and linguine. I had that, about 2 months ago. Fantastic. Lovely. Downtown at Woodfire Grill, the EatLocalMinnesota.com restaurant of the week. 253 West 7th Street in St. Paul. Just fantastic. And, of course, great grilled items there. You'll have a good time. It is the EatLocalMinnesota.com restaurant of the week. Eric Rivenes is joining us right now. Dirty Doc Ames and the Scandal That Shook Minneapolis. It's a brand new book I'm highly encouraging everyone to get because it's it is a great piece of Minnesota history. And Eric is kind enough to join us today to talk about his book. Hey, Eric.
Hey, how are you?
I'm doing very well. You know, this is... When I talk to an author, especially about a historical element, there are some times where it's like, well, what really prompted you to talk about this? I'm actually more shocked that there aren't far more books about Doc Ames because, holy gosh, what a character he was.
I know, I'm crazy, right? That's what my editor and I, as we were working on the book, we were trying to figure out why something hadn't been written about him before. Yeah, it's just unbelievable.
The time of Doc Ames, it was almost... like it was ripe. I mean, we had a state, of course, that came in right at the Civil War. We had the growth of the state, and here we get into the turn into the 20th century, and it's the early 1900s, and you know, it's that time. Minneapolis just seemed to be ripe for corruption at that point. It was big enough to be abused, and enough things were going on at that point that people were not paying attention nearly enough. Is that a good way to state it?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, yeah, it's a very, very interesting transitional time, Minneapolis. I mean, it's the city is growing. People are looking to the 20th century. We've got about a dozen automobiles on the city streets in Minneapolis in 1901 when all this happens. So, I mean, the future is looking very bright. Progressives are coming in and hoping to kind of take control back of their local governments, but there are still these holdouts from like the Tammany Hall era of government, you know, these ward bosses that controlled politics, you know, kind of micromanaged their parties. And that happened in Minneapolis. And Albert Alonzo Ames, better known as Doc Ames, was one of those old style Tammany Hall type, you know, backslapping ringsters that somehow managed to finagle his way into a fourth term as mayor of Minneapolis.
Back then, when the terms were, was it 2 years terms?
Yeah, they were 2 year terms. Yep.
There were 2 year terms back then. And you talk about the Tammany Hall and the stuff that the graft that came out of the East Coast. It took a while to get here, and I mean, it was interesting because a lot of that stuff was going on on the East Coast, really in the days after the Civil War in the 1870s, 1880s, that was when there's really kind of the high time of a lot of this stuff. But eventually moved over here. Was it? I know it wasn't real prevalent here, but was this kind of corruption, you know, common in Minneapolis prior to Doc Ames? It doesn't seem like it was, or at least it's never really been written about either.
It wasn't, except for Doc Ames.
Okay.
Doc Ames served as mayor 4 times, mm-hmm. even back to 1876. There were rumors that he was in bed with the liquor industry. He was a friend of the saloons. He was taking money from brothel madams. He was personally, there were questions about his morality, visiting gambling saloons and frequenting, you know, brothels himself. And yeah, I mean, there were rumors that he was doing some of these things even back to the 1870s and 1880s. But his followers didn't care. I mean, he had this core group of followers that he had kind of built up because he was a doctor. And one of his key ways of building support was he was actually donating his medical services to people who were not able to actually pay for them. So, and he even said later on that every patient that he gave medical service, you know, for free to would be a voter for his for at least 1 year. So it was very calculated in what he was doing to kind of build up this group of people, these disenfranchised voters. They called themselves the Tin Pail Brigade because they couldn't afford to pay for their lunches at lunch wagons or restaurants. They brought tin pails to work every day. I mean, just the real salt of the earth who maybe not had not been previously involved in politics. A lot of them were immigrants who didn't feel connected to the communities here. And they would follow him to hell and back, literally. And he used this as his advantage when he was politically washed up by the 1890s, but somehow he managed his way in for a final fourth term in 1901, and that's when all hell broke loose.
There, I would be remiss if I did not point out the certain parallels to a current situation we have in this country, where you have a flawed individual who is beloved by people who feel like they have been left behind, who are overlooking his faults to give the blind allegiance to. How exactly, though, I mean, that can't have been enough to put him over the top, or was it? How does a man like that get into the mayor's office in Minneapolis?
Well, it was during this progressive movement that was happening. I mean, people really did want to clean up the cities, and they wanted to break these local ward bosses. And so what the state legislature did right after the Spanish-American War is they passed something called a direct primary law. And the whole purpose of this was to open up primaries, so anyone from any party could vote in any primary. And the whole idea was to take this stranglehold from these local ward bosses away, you know, and give the people of Minneapolis more power in who they chose as their Republican or Democratic nominee. So this direct primary law happens at the most interesting of times, because Doc Ames, he had flip-flopped back and forth throughout his entire political career. He'd started as a Republican, he switched to a Democrat, then he became a populist, and then he became an independent. But finally, again, this washed-up old, he was called an old man, even though he was only 58 years old in 1900, he suddenly proclaims himself a Republican once more, even though he's got this following of, you know, many of them are Democratic supporters. And he decides he's going to run as the Republican nominee for mayor, and because his followers, you know, whatever their party affiliation, can now vote in the Republican primary election, they actually kind of push him into office. So it's kind of a fluke, and it was meant to keep guys like this out of office. But in this particular situation, he took advantage of it. He's a pretty cunning guy, and he suddenly is mayor of Minneapolis in 1901.
Eric Rivenes is joining us right now. Dirty Doc Ames and the Scandal That Shook Minneapolis is the book. Doc Ames, when he was in office, there are shakedowns, and then there are shakedowns. I don't think we have enough time to go through all the stuff that he was doing here. But
Talk
about one or two, which are the best. I mean, I like the magazine sales. That was pretty good. Was that to the prostitutes? They had subscribed to to the magazines or something like that?
Well, yeah. I mean, he shook down, he started right away shaking down brothel owners, madams. But he really focused on the fringe madams that weren't, I know we don't have a lot of time here, but prostitution was illegal in 1901, but it was still sanctioned, you know, a very uncomfortable relationship between the city and prostitution during this time, where they were collecting money, but not as fees, but more as fines from these madams. So the city is already collecting fines from these official madams running in official red light districts. Doc decides to go after the fringe madams who aren't a part of the system. And yeah, basically he sends around it's so crazy. He sends around his medical assistant, this 24-year-old kid named Irwin Gardner, who's a Hamlin medical student, and he makes him a special officer, a special police officer, and assigns him the role of going to these brothel madams and basically saying, business has changed. We're now in control. You're going to be paying money directly to us in exchange for us protecting you. This is one of many, many things. And he would also send around doctors later on, they would charge fees for inspecting these young women, these workers at these brothels, and asking for payment in exchange for, you know, checking them for venereal diseases, et cetera, et cetera. But there was proof later on that that never actually happened, that they were just collecting the money and, and kind of ignoring the women. So, that, yeah, that's one really, really interesting aspect of this. They were installing slot machines in saloons, despite the these saloon owners' dismay. They were also setting up these bunco games with con artists. They were actually inviting these bunco artists, these confidence men from around the country into St. Paul and saying, we will help you set up these games and you in turn will pay us money. So they were actively colluding. Not only were they colluding with these gamblers, these bunco artists, but they were actually organizing these games. It's just unbelievably crazy.
Well, he made his brother the chief of police.
Yeah.
How did he even get away with that? I mean, you would think, I mean, I know that we weren't exactly, I mean, the flower, you know, the flower age wasn't as maybe as grand as those initial days, but I mean, you still had a lot of people like Washburn and Pillsbury and guys like that in town. I'm kind of surprised all the big mill guys, the business leaders didn't kind of shut this down because it was clear corruption was going on.
Right. Yeah. And they tried, but again, I mean, they had their own candidate, the Republican candidate, that was supposed to be, you know, a straight-shooting fella. But, yeah, I mean, again, these followers of his just basically pushed him into office. But, yeah, his choice of his own brother as police chief, this kind of this vacillating, weak-kneed kind of character, Fred Ames, it was just unbelievable as well. And Fred Ames had his own issues. He was a colonel of the 13th Minnesota, the famed 13th Minnesota that stormed Manila during the Spanish-American War. And, I mean, probably one of the most famous military regiments in Minnesota history, probably after the 1st Minnesota. And he came back. While he was there, there were rumors of him being a coward, et cetera, et cetera. The one tie-in to what would be the fact that he served, the 13th Minnesota acted as a military police in Manila once they took control, and they were kind of battling down insurrectos in the city of Manila. And Doc used that as a reason. Well, he had this experience, you know, running a military police force in Manila. How that really correlates to running a municipal police department in Minneapolis, that's pretty questionable and tenuous, you know?
Yeah, well, unless you want to like a military-like control over the people, well, it makes a little sense then, but I mean, it was kind of one of those. There was such craft, and I do want everyone to go get this book because we're touching the surface here. I mean, this was really atrocious, the level of corruption that was going on under Doc Ames. You know, his downfall is quite interesting, too. But the one thing I'll focus on is he literally ran away when things started falling apart. I kind of think about this in kind of modern terms. And like if all of a sudden, you know, just the president all of a sudden, when Mueller is closing in on him, just runs away to a different country. I mean, it's so bizarre. Where exactly did he run to?
It is interesting, and I do want to mention one thing. They had an internal motto within his inner circle, within the administration. Almost from the beginning, it was called "Get the Coin." That was their motto. That was what they were. That's the entire administration. That was their sole purpose, to make as much money as they possibly could in this 2-year term. But oh my gosh, Doc Ames! As soon as the pressure started getting really, really hot for him, because he saw a lot of his guys going down. There was a grand jury in the summer of 1902 that started taking these guys down one by one. I mean, he saw the writing on the wall, pretended all of this, well, didn't pretend, but he said he had gotten a job in West Baden, Indiana, to run this resort. So he was telling people already he was not going to finish out his term, but he knew that the heat was getting too hot for him, you know? So he leaves, and he eventually, people kind of lose sight of him, and all of a sudden, he's sick, and he can't come back to Minneapolis when they ask him to come back. And then suddenly, he disappears from Indiana, and people don't know where he is, and eventually the sheriff's department, because this is the one thing that Doc couldn't control. He had the police department in the palm of his hand. He also tried to take over the sheriff's department to put his own candidates in, and that never actually materialized. He didn't have enough time to do that. So the sheriff's department definitely wanted to bring him down. They sent out deputies. They kind of tracked him all through the South and through the East Coast until they finally found him in New Hampshire. And eventually, after months and months on the lam and becoming a fugitive, there were wanted posters out, you know, with his face on it. They finally were able to bring him back, and he was brought back to face the music, and that's kind of a joke in itself.
Well, yeah, and I won't get into that. I want people to get this book because there are characters within the state of Minnesota. I mean, you brought up the Minnesota 13th, Minnesota 1st. You can go back to, you know, Ramsey. You can go back to, you know, various people throughout, Hubert Humphrey and Mondale. I mean, we've had great characters here. Paul Wellstone was a great character. And we've had great people here.
Olson, yeah.
But there are very few people who are known because of such, you know, just they were so broken. They were so greedy. They were so corrupt. This is really got to be, I mean, is there anyone, to your knowledge, once again, is there anyone in Minnesota that even comes close to Doc Ames? I can't think of anything that even gets close to this.
No, I can't either. No, he's a unique individual. And part of the entertaining part of the story is this cast of degenerates and idiots that he surrounds himself with. And that is half the fun of the book, just reading some of these crazy people, not only Irwin Gardner, but some of these other oddball characters that he places in important positions. And everything just falls apart in months.
Well, and I will say this, I just got mentioned, oh, well, what about some of the people that were running St. Paul during the crime days? Yeah, but they were just telling people to go rob Minneapolis. They weren't it wasn't like this. It was a different kind of corruption, but it was kind of like, you go do your crimes in Minneapolis, you don't bring that over here.
Exactly. It was John O'Connor was the police chief of St. Paul during this time, and he's the one that would eventually create the O'Connor system, which was the deal with criminals that would last into the 20s and even early 30s until the Midwest bank robbing gangsters like Dillinger and the Barker Karpus gang would screw things up. But yeah, there was this deal between gangsters, and you can come in, you can come into St. Paul, you know, spend your money, roam around freely. We want to know you're here. And in return, you do not commit any crimes within the boundaries of St. Paul. John O'Connor was actually the police chief at this time. So
yeah, but it's still nothing compared to Doc Ames. Dirty Doc Ames and the Scandal That Shook Minneapolis. Eric Rivenes is the once again the author here. Out available everywhere, correct, sir?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. All Minnesota bookstores and online, too. Yep.
And I do want to mention you have an event coming up, correct?
I do. Yeah. We have I'm giving a special Minneapolis Most Notorious tour, which is on Sunday. And we're getting near full capacity, but I will definitely add another one if as we continue to get more people. But it's my personal, I ran the original St. Paul gangster tours back in the mid-90s. So I'm also kind of a tour guide. So I've kind of crafted a tour that not only focuses on some of these sites related to the book, but also, you know, the famous Jewish gangster Kid Can, mm-hmm. and his attacks on some of these crusading reporters who are trying to bring him down, some of these other interesting characters and events that happened in Minneapolis history as well.
I'll make sure I make a link to that. Once again, that's a historical true crime motor coach tour that comes up on Sunday, the 20th. I'll have the details for that up on the social media. The book, Dirty Doc Ames and the Scandal That Shook Minneapolis, available everywhere. Eric, thank you very much for the time. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Great meeting you. Thanks.
Nice chatting with you. Eric Rivenes joining us today. We'll spotlight that interview. It's the Matt McNeil Show on AM 950.
Stars, Seward Co-op, serving the community for nearly 45 years, invites you to shop their two convenient locations, both offering the strong commitment to local producers and healthy foods you've come to expect. Seward focuses on locally grown and raised products, fair trade, and environmental sustainability. Shop their selection of meats, artisan cheeses, and house-made baked goods. Find Seward at 2823 East Franklin Avenue or the Friendship Store on 38th Street and 3rd Avenue in Minneapolis. More at seward.coop.
Hi, it's Tom Hartman. You know, Continental Diamond is special for a lot of reasons. The owners are Jimmy and Helene Pessis, a husband and wife team who had a dream to open their own store more than 30 years ago. They've built a business that is the gold standard. The readers of Minnesota Bride Magazine have named Continental Diamond the best jeweler for the last 7 years. Why? Amazing, friendly, no-pressure customer service, a selection of fine diamonds and design jewelry unlike anywhere else, and the fresh-baked chocolate chip cookies are pretty great, too. Continental Diamond in St. Louis Park and at ContinentalDiamond.com.
Located just north of 50th and France, the Great Wall Restaurant has provided a delicious taste of authentic Chinese cuisine since 1981. Specializing in Sichuan and Peking dishes, they offer one of the most extensive menus in the Twin Cities. Favorites include hot and sour soup, pan-fried dumplings, and mushu pork with homemade Chinese pancakes. Stop by their Edina location or call for takeout at 952-927-4439. See the full menu at greatwallrestaurant.us.
Jeff Warner here, inviting you to Grill Expo this weekend at Warner's Deli and Stores. We're firing up America's best-selling gas, charcoal, and pellet grills so you can watch them in action, enjoy some mouth-watering samples, and choose the grill that's perfect for you. Warner's Deli has the lowest prices of the year, plus free assembly, free delivery, free recycling, 18 months zero-interest financing, and three free products from no-name butcher-quality meats and seafood. It's Grill Expo this Saturday and Sunday at all 9 Warner's Deli and Stores.
What kind of a jackass would let an animal pick their insurance? Did you really think a lizard could save you money on car insurance? Would you let a duck pick your health policy? Insurance can be a zoo, but this is ridiculous. What you really need is an insurance agent that isn't looking out for the insurance companies. You need Cheryl at Array, an independent agent with 30 years experience looking for the best rate possible. Quit monkeying around and call 763-504-3067. That's 763-504-3067 for Cheryl at Array, representing you, not the insurance companies.
All right, I got two final stories I get to. I could talk history all freaking day. I ended up going way longer than I thought I was going to go on that interview. Thanks, Hunter. I appreciate us getting it back on time. Two stories. I could talk about the Chinese basically give money to a project that Trump's associated with. It's in Indonesia. It's a big amusement park thing. Trump's going to have his name on it. So Trump's going to make money personally on this event. The Chinese are a $500 million investor in this. Immediately after that, Trump orders help for a Chinese phone maker, ZTE. Now, ZTE is a Chinese phone maker whose phones are being used to spy on Americans. As a matter of fact, you can't take a ZTE phone on a military base in a U.S. military base anywhere in the world. They are that bad. And yet, Trump is giving money to this Chinese phone manufacturer. They don't manufacture the phones in America. They don't. They don't do this. This is a Chinese company, and Trump is ordering the Commerce Department to give a Chinese company that doesn't get many of its materials from the United States, they get most of their materials from China as well, to help them. That should be the end of the president right there. I mean, it should be. But I'm going to go back to this story, Mosaic. I don't know if you saw this. This is the corporate headquarters. They are a phosphate mines that they work with. They're down in Florida. They're moving their headquarters out of Minnesota down to Hillsborough County, Florida, to be closer to the phosphate mines. Now, of course, Republicans are immediately saying, see another Fortune 500 company leaving Minnesota. Can I point out what a lot of Democrats are pointing out? You Republicans have been doing everything but strapping your knee pads on for these corporations. You've been cutting their tax rates like crazy, and Trump just did so too. But you guys have been giving state money to corporations. How come that's not good enough to keep them here? Oh, that's right. There was no incentive to stay here to get the corporate tax rate. That's right. Mike's up next. Till tomorrow. See ya.